And it's time for Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Great folks there, just south of Kearney Street. Our author today, Jason Riley, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and his book is The Affirmative Action Myth, Why Blacks Don't Need Racial Preference to Succeed. Jason Riley, thank you for being with us. Appreciate it greatly. And I know I mentioned you being the fellow Manhattan Institute and columnist of the Wall Street Journal, but just if you would, give everyone a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm a journalist by training. I have been writing for the Wall Street Journal for more than 30 years now, and so that's my background. And in addition to that, I write books and do a lot of public speaking. And this is my most recent book. But most of my books are about topics I cover in my column, urban affairs. I write a lot about education and crime and income inequality, immigration, that sort of thing. And so the books come out of those columns.
Well, let's talk about, affirmative action. And I think that, unfortunately, a lot of people in this country probably believe that until affirmative action came along, the system was set up in a way that made it impossible for people of color to succeed. And affirmative action was a way of basically giving equal opportunity to people that otherwise did not have it. And so prior to affirmative action, because of that system, people of specifically black people in this country fell way behind in terms of every category of significance compared to white people. And it wasn't until affirmative action gave them the ability to have equal access to these opportunities that they finally were able to catch up. And I think that's probably what a lot of people think is reality. However, of course, much of what your book explains is that's not necessarily the case.
That's exactly right. I think you gave a nice summary of the sort of received wisdom out there, but much of it is wrong. So yes, a system was in place that made it more difficult for minorities to move ahead, but that system, however, did not in fact prevent blacks from moving ahead well before we had policies such as affirmative action in place starting in the late 60s and early 70s. So, for example, the black poverty rate fell from 87% in 1940 to 47% in 1960, over a 20-year period, a 40 percentage point drop in black poverty. By 1960, most black families were out of poverty. Black people, climbed out of poverty on their own, not due to affirmative action policies, which wouldn't be put in place until the late 60s and early 70s. And yet, affirmative action is credited with lifting black people into the middle class and lifting them out of poverty. So the track record is very different. The data shows a very different narrative than the one that is out there that you just described.
What do you think the driving force behind that original concept of affirmative action was? Was it something cynical, or was it something that the people pushing it felt was really needed? And then once it became clear through results that it wasn't doing what it was argued to be intended to do, why the continued push?
Well, I think it was well-intentioned to begin with. Attitudes in this country towards Jim Crow policies were changing for the better, slower in the South than in the North, but they were changing throughout the country. And I think that the initial effort of affirmative action was to reach out to groups that had traditionally been overlooked, whether it was in terms of hiring or in terms of admission to college, and help those groups come up to existing standards at the time. What it became, though, over the decades, is an effort to lower standards for certain racial and ethnic groups. And that's what affirmative action has meant in practice since at least the early 1970s. And the problem is that that form of affirmative action is not only hugely divisive in a nation as ethnically and racially diverse as ours, it's also unconstitutional, as we heard from the Supreme Court back in 2023 when they banned race-based admissions in college. It And the point of my book is that in addition to those two things, it simply has not worked. It has not helped to lift the black poor out of poverty. To the extent that affirmative action has been successful, it has helped already well-off black people become better off. And that's why you heard so much apocalyptic talk around the 2023 Supreme Court decision from black elites who were complaining about this decision not going their way. They said, oh my goodness, these policies created the black middle class. Without them, you know, black people won't be able to move ahead in America. Campuses will be whitewashed and on and on and on. And I said, no, that's not true. There was a significant black middle class in this country well before affirmative action. It has continued to grow, but at a much slower rate than it was growing in the decades prior to affirmative action. If anything, these policies have throttled black upward mobility. They have not been the basis for it.
Well, that leads to my next question. Our author of the week, Jason Riley, the book The Affirmative Action Myth. I think a lot of people may believe that, well, affirmative action, it's probably not the best thing in the world, but it doesn't do any harm. What harm does it do? It can only help or do nothing at all. Does it, in fact, I mean, well, you just talked about how we saw see the throttling of it, the deterioration of the successes at the same time as affirmative action. So is affirmative action responsible for that, or does it just sort of occur at the same time?
Well, it's also harmed the groups it's intended to help. And we have evidence of this because even before the Supreme Court ruling in 2023, a bunch of states, 9 or 10 states, had passed their own bans on race-based college admissions. Out in California, big, diverse states. California had done it, Texas, Florida, Arizona. And so we had a sort of natural experiment out there as to what would happen. So after California passed its ban back in the mid-90s, you know, college black enrollment at the most selective schools in the UC system, so UCLA and Berkeley, it fell. Black enrollment fell, Hispanic enrollment fell at those schools. But throughout the whole University of California system, after affirmative action was banned, black college enrollment increased. So at UC Santa Barbara, UC Santa Cruz, and so forth, kids were going to schools where they could handle the work. They were graduating with higher GPAs. And they were graduating at much, much higher rates, including in the more difficult disciplines, the STEM fields, math, engineering, computer science, and so forth. So a policy that had been put in place to increase the ranks of the black middle class had, in practice, we know from the California experience, resulted in fewer black lawyers and doctors and engineers and physicists than we would have had in the absence of the policy. So what affirmative action has done in higher education in particular is to mismatch kids with schools over the past 50 years. So Asian kids and white kids tend to go to schools where they meet the standards of the average student at that school. But black kids are funneled into these selective colleges where they're in over their head. They're not academically prepared to do the work, and they struggle. They pool at the bottom of the class, they're dropping out at higher rates, they're switching to easier majors. And this mismatch effect between the student and the school has had very, very negative consequences for blacks in this country. And it's one of the reasons I'm glad that these policies are going to go away.
We are talking with the author of the week, Jason Riley, the book, The Affirmative Action Myth, Why Blacks Don't Need Racial Preferences to Succeed. You know, affirmative action was a term that any time there were discussions about race in education or the workplace that was synonymous with those conversations. They always were part of it. In modern era, you hear less of that term, more about, you know, equity, critical race theory, diversity, equity, inclusion. Now, to me, it seems as if it is, I don't know, an evolved or enhanced version of, and perhaps even more damaging than affirmative action, arguing that, of course, because of people's skin color, they should be treated differently. Is there a relation between the ideology that promoted affirmative action and what we see today in CRT and DEI?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is all of a piece. And the common thread through whether it's affirmative action, quotas, set-asides, diversity, equity, and inclusion, critical race theory, the common thread through all of those things is an aversion to the principle of colorblindness. That is what the proponents want to avoid. And that's why I think they're going to continue to fight for these policies, even though the Supreme Court has ruled the way it ruled in 2023. They're opposed to colorblindness, and I think they're going to keep up the fight. Just the way, by the way, the Southern segregationists did after the Brown v. Board of Education ruling. They didn't throw up their hands and go, oh, we lost. We're going to allow desegregation now. They continue to fight colorblind policymaking. And I think the progressives today pushing DEI are just as opposed to colorblind policies as those Southern segregationists, and they're going to continue to fight. And so you're going to need follow-up lawsuits. Mm. You're going to need follow-up litigation. You're going to need follow-up threats, and they're going to watchdogs keeping an eye on these schools and making sure they're not doing end runs around the Supreme Court ruling. That will all be necessary because I don't think they're going to give up without a fight.
We have a lot of parents and grandparents listening, and oftentimes I think they don't know how to tackle the discussion with their kids or grandkids that come home from school, and they're told, well, colorblindness is racism. That is proof of racism because it's white privilege, and we need to be the opposite of colorblind. We have to, in order to fully appreciate and understand others, we have to know, quote, their story, and that involves their color. And I think for a lot of parents and grandparents, that they don't even really know how to respond because it's such a weird and counterintuitive concept. What would your advice be to them in terms of how to approach that sort of conversation?
Well, I'm not in the advice giving business, so I'm not sure.
Well, what would you say? Well, what would you say?
Historically, I would say that historically, blacks have advanced when the policy goal was colorblindness. They've advanced at a much faster rate. When the policy goal has been colorblindness, then they have advanced under affirmative action. Just to give you another example in the field of education, I cite a scholar at Harvard, Robert Putnam, who put out a book a couple years ago about black college completion rates. And it turns out that in the 40s and 50s and 60s, the black-white gap in college completion had been narrowing. Black people were catching up on white people when it came to higher education. But around 1970, so right around the start of affirmative action, black college completion rates stalled. And they are today right about where they were in 1970, after 50 years of affirmative action. So that tells you how blacks advance in the absence of these policies versus how they advance under affirmative action policies. And I just say compare and contrast. Look at the track record. Look at the data. And you will get a very different story than what you're hearing from the people out there in the sort of a civil rights industrial complex, as I like to call it, who are pitching a very, very different narrative.
Any final thoughts for folks today?
I hope you take a look at the book and let me know what you think about it. I mean, I'm trying to make a sober argument based on data, based on evidence, based on reporting, logic, reason. It's an emotional topic, but I try to bring more light than heat to the discussion. So pick up a copy and see what you think.
Thank you for your time this morning, sir. Appreciate it greatly.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Jason Riley, our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. The book, again, you can get at ABC Books, along with our past author of the week books, of course, and it is titled The Affirmative Action Myth, Why Blacks Don't Need Racial Preferences to Succeed. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.